Welcome to the bookshelf and three nights which we will spend with Pivot Spokane, which is a new storytelling initiative that began with eight stories in February presented at the Washington Cracker Factory. Tonight we return to that scene for the latest Pivot Secrets. Tonight we'll hear stories by Linda Rippon, Ben Faulkner, and Mark Rollins. Tomorrow it will be Christopher Horsethief and Eugene Zablonsky, and on Thursday, Liz Rognes and Isaac Grambo. Pretend it is May 11th, and we're at the Washington Cracker Factory.
Linda Rippon.
Okay, my story begins like this. Mom, just tell me, what is it? Mom, no, honey, would you like a cup of coffee? Mom, tell me, what? Just tell me. Honey, this is one of those things that you just don't stand at a door and talk about. Come on in. Okay. So, I'm going to give you a little background on my family, for starters. We grew up in the Valley, and I have two brothers, so there's three of us, kids, and my mom and my dad. I want to give you just a little bit of information about what we kind of do in life, those types of things, and a little bit about kind of who we are as people physically. So I'm going to start with my older brother, his name is Kevin. He is about 5'7" tall, okay, and slight build and quite an incredible, phenomenal distance runner. The joke with us all the time is, you are crazy because you tan. He's got dark hair, tans just like that. So that's kind of an interesting thing as life progresses. Then there's me, I'm 5'9", so 5'7", 5'9". I am blonde. I am also heavy into athletics at one point in time in my life, and I don't tan whatsoever, okay? Not a big deal, but it's kind of interesting. So then there's my little brother, who happens to be 6'3", okay? Yeah, and so we've got dark hair, blonde, we've got 6'3", sandy brown hair, and his athleticism dealt with spinning a globe when he was a little tiny kid. So that's about it for him, although he is very active and he hikes and does all that good stuff. So my mom is still plugging away. She's in her mid-80s. And you know what? I think part of that is the fact that she's Canadian, Norwegian, all that good stuff, so good Viking portion of longevity and health. My dad, however, has passed away, complications of Alzheimer's. Okay, so we grew up, like I said, in the Valley. I already mentioned that, so I'm going to keep going. The story begins basically from there, in that my little brother, who is my 6'3", spinning guy, married a gal who happens to be Japanese Filipino, okay? So they have three kids. All of us kids have kids. And he just decides one day, because he's curious like that, that I think I want to go and have a lineage test, because there's me and then there's Bolin, who is Japanese Filipino, and I want to see maybe what our mix is with our kids. So he sends away for a lineage test. Gets it back. He doesn't mention this to the family, by the way. He gets it back and come to see on these results, there's like zero Norwegian or Scandinavian or anything that should be there, but it's not. Okay, so I'm thinking, had that been me doing that test and I got those results, I just would have been like, okay, this test sucks. Done. Okay. But Robert just, I think in the back of his mind, maybe was thinking, these two are athletes. I'm not so much. I'm kind of the bookworm. So he doesn't drop it. He doesn't tell us. Okay. So come October, now this, he did this last summer. So this is current. Okay. For the most part. So come October, he kind of decides, I need to look into this just a little bit, because this doesn't make sense to me. But he doesn't bother asking my mom anything. He just says, well, I live in the area where I know I can go to see if there's any records that might indicate I have different biological parents. So my brother, all 6'3 of him, and he is a lawyer, by the way, walks into the place where you get these statistics and all that, and doesn't really know what he's going to say, but he gets up to the counter, and he Hi, my name is I'm here to pick up my records. Okay, could you just sign here, please? I'll be back in just a minute. So off she goes. Robert does his thing. And he doesn't know what's going to happen until she walks around the corner with a nice, thick little packet in her hand. And then Robert is kind of like, oh, dude. And she literally says, well, here are your adoption records, Robert. Okay. So Robert still doesn't say anything to our entire family. Nothing. Okay. So apparently he goes home. He's not surprised, but he is surprised. Within 5 minutes, he has located where his biological mother lives because of our social media opportunities this day. Okay. Still doesn't tell us. Okay. We go on. I do remember one time when we were all together, because they live outside of Spokane, and we were together, and I remember Robert kind of tossing out this idea. I think I'm going to take a lineage test, an ancestry test. And I remember my mom saying, those things are never right. Never. Those things are never right. And I'm not thinking anything of it, right? Come December this year, Robert decides, I'm gonna send a message. And he sends his biological mother a message, which probably was a little bit of a shock for her. Doesn't hear back right away, but come New Year's Eve, when he gets home, he opens up his stuff, and there is a message from his biological mother. And it reads something like this. It's very, you know, Robert's eloquent with his speaking. I don't know what he said to her, but he read to me what she had said back. And she had said, dear Robert, not a day has gone by in the last 48 years, 27 blah, 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 2 seconds that I have not thought of you fondly from afar and loved you from afar. And it was kind of short and sweet after that. But that began, apparently, part of his little journey, still not telling any of us. Okay? So in talking with Robert, in retrospect, turns out he couldn't stand it anymore. He wasn't sleeping. He was just having trouble with that. And so he decides, I'm going to call Mom. Okay. So apparently on January 19th, 2017, which is a Thursday night, by the way, he gives her a call, and just to verify if this is in fact true. So he is greeted with the truth that this is true. So the next day, Friday, as I'm on my way home, I receive a little text, but I wait till I get home because that's safe. And it just says, it's from my mom, and it says, hey, honey, I'm okay, because remember, she's in her mid-80s, and that's what you say to your daughter, who's going to freak out if you're not. I'm okay, but within the next couple days, could we meet? Can you come over? Because there's just something I want to tell you. Okay. Couldn't make it that night, so I hop over there the next day. So Saturday, about 11 o'clock-ish, I go in and I go to the front door. She opens it and I say, Mom, just tell me, what is it? She's like, I'm good. Mom, just tell me, blah, 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 blah. Honey, come sit down. I'm going to give you that cup of coffee. So I sit down and I'm like, okay, I'll just be patient with you. I'm good. Okay, sit down. And she starts by babbling, in which case I cut her off. Mom, just tell me. Okay, now. She goes, well, I'm fine, but honey, there is something I need to tell you. So she grabs my hand, and she kind of is rubbing it. And she goes, well, the truth is, your little brother, well, he's adopted. What? Yeah, he's adopted. He has different biological parents than us? Than you? What? He's not my real brother? Oh, honey, but there's a little bit more. Your older brother. Well, he's adopted too. Mom, I mean, do they know? What? You've got to be, but honey, there's one more thing. You also are adopted.
Linda Rippon.
So our next storyteller is going to be Ben Faulkner. Ben Faulkner, where are you?
So teaching high school sex education is a very unique experience. I highly recommend it. So 5 years ago, that's what I'm doing with my life. I am standing at the front of my 10th grade psychology classroom. I have about 30, you know, pimply 15-year-old kids squirming in their seats. And it's super hot because I'm in Tegucigalpa, Honduras. That's where I'm teaching at the time. And so there's no AC in my classroom at all. It's super hot. I'm sweating bullets. But I'm sweating bullets not just because of the heat, but because I have just put on the PowerPoint a chart outlining the stages of the sexual response cycle, and I have to explain them. So I start off with, you know, the foreplay and the excitement phase, and then the friction phase, I think is what I called it, all the way from climax to the refractory period, all the way from start to completion, the whole circle of life. And by the time I am done, My face is on fire, pretty much like what it is now. Some kid in the back corner farts and nobody laughs. Like, that's when you know it's real bad. And I look out and no one is making eye contact with me. I swear, the awkward pubescent tension in this room is so intense, it is like a blown up condom about to pop. Like, and if you remember sex ed at all, that's not how you're supposed to use it. So anyways, if I didn't think it'd get any worse, but then all of a sudden this hand flies up and this perky student sitting at the front row, she's like taking notes, super into it. She goes, Mr. Faulkner, very academically, she's like, Mr. Faulkner, what about multiple orgasms? Can you tell us about those? That is a very important question. I'm sure they're lovely. And I think that's all I said and we moved on. So. The next thing I do, a little less risky, I want to do like a kind of a social psychology experiment. So I put on the board a picture of a toy G.I. Joe, and I say, all right, we're going to take a vote. Do you guys think that this is a boy's toy, a girl's toy, or is it both? And most hands go up for both. I was like, okay. So then I put a picture of a Barbie doll on the board, and I say, is this a boy's toy, is this a girl's toy, or is it both? And most hands go up for just girls. Very few go up for both. And I'm like, oh, guys, what the heck? Like, why the inconsistency? Like, why is it okay for, you know, a girl to play with the G.I. Joe, but it's not okay for a boy to play with a Barbie doll? Like, explain that to me. And they go crazy, especially the boys. They're like, you know, boys are tough. Boys are machismo. You know, they don't associate with pink. You know, they don't play with dolls. And I'm in the fray of the comments, I hear a student say the word maricón. And I say, you all know that I do not allow a word like that in my class. Maricón from Spanish translated into English as faggot. And they're like, whoa, sorry, Mr. Faulkner, we're just telling the truth, right? Like, that's what it is. That's weak, that's effeminate, that's gay. And I said, that is not what that word means. Gay means that some people are attracted to the same sex, and it's just as normal as anything else. And if anybody in this room is maybe struggling with that right now, you can come and talk to me about it. The bell rings, thank God, and they dismiss, and I am left just sort of feeling winded. A few days later, I get an email late at night from a student named Allie, that's not her real name, but I'll call her Allie for this story. And I get an email from her saying that she's, you know, freaking out, and she said, you said we could come and talk to you for struggling with this. So she said she was struggling with her sexuality, and that her mom wanted to take her to an ex-gay therapist. And so I said, okay, let's come to my classroom, let's talk about this. So at lunch, she comes to meet with me, and she tells me that she's having a really difficult time. She's one of those students who I would describe as sort of folded on herself, like wouldn't look at me, wouldn't really look up, kind of had her head held down, you know, long curly hair, glasses, and she said that she had carved the word gay into her thigh because she hated it so much about herself. And I said, Allie, I am so sorry that this is happening to you. I'm here for you. You come to my classroom anytime. We'll deal with it together. And she said, okay. But then later that year, she was found cutting her wrists in the bathroom by another student who found her, and so she was subsequently sent home. So then fast forward to the end of my second year of teaching at this school in Honduras. So I'm sitting on my favorite park bench. It's one of my favorite spots in the entire city. So it's overlooking the downtown Tegucigalpa, which, if you can imagine, it's just like a tangle of buildings and roads, and you can hear the taxis honking, you can smell the trash burning, there's palm trees everywhere. And then up on the top of the mountain, there's a statue of Jesus, kind of like Christ the Redeemer, overlooking the city. And I'm sitting there sweating in the hot sun, feeling completely and totally overwhelmed. Because this is not just Ali's secret. This is also my secret. I am also gay. And I've been gay this whole time, and I've not only been creating space to bear her secret, but also bearing my own, because I'm in a situation where if word of my sexuality got out at the school, I would most definitely be fired and most likely on a plane home the next day. And I just didn't know if I could keep doing it. And I'm sitting there thinking, should I stay a third year or should I not? And then I think about how not too long ago, the school had gotten together to decide whether or not Allie could come back for her senior year. And they agreed, yeah, Allie could come back, but under close supervision. And I figured what that close supervision would be. And so I tried to call upon my inner Beyonce, and I said, I am going to stay a third year. And so I did. And I'm teaching a 12th grade philosophy class that year, and Allie enrolls, and I sit down with her and I say, Allie, we are going to get you out of here. You're going to graduate, you're gonna get out of here, and you're gonna have a great life, I promise you. And some kind of fire must have lit, because she nailed that philosophy class and she made it to graduation, and I'm standing there, and if I'm being honest with you all, like, I was just hoping that she would stay alive. And when I see her walking across the stage at graduation, you know, the lights are all on her, and she's holding herself more highly than I've ever seen her hold herself before. And I'm standing up at the front of the stage, and I hand her her diploma, and she's beaming, and I say, congratulations, Allie, you did it. And she takes her diploma and walks back to the other students. And I know that I have one final chance to kind of give her some teacherly advice, so I chase her down after the ceremony, and I give her a big hug, and I say, Allie, you did it! I am so proud of you! Now get the hell out of here and go fly! And here's the thing, I'm not just saying this to her, I'm saying this to me, because at this time, my work in Honduras is over, and I'm returning back to North America after this to start and own my own coming out journey. And so when she looks at me, tears streaming down her face, I never really like told her, I didn't tell anybody, but I could just kind of tell that she was like, yeah, yeah, you too. And so while I was teaching in Honduras for 3 years, in the closet completely, I had 7 students come out to me over those 3 years. And I wish that I had hours to tell you each of their stories, but I'll finish with Allie. So I actually got in touch with her a few days ago. And I am happy to report that the girl who once carved gay into her thigh because she hated it about herself is now living in the United States. It's been 3 years since she graduated, so she's living in the United States. She's attending college and working towards her bachelor's degree and doing very well. She is out and open to everyone in her community. Woo! And thank you. And she is dating a lovely young woman who says makes her very happy. And then the last thing she said Mr. Faulkner, I just can't believe how normal it all feels. You know, like I said that first day of class, how it's normal. And she said, I never thought it would feel this way, but it does. So thank you. And that's actually not the last thing she said. The last thing she said is even better. So you know how she carved that word into, she's carved gay into her thigh. Now what she does is she takes a pen and writes, is awesome. Which I think is amazing because let's be honest, gay is pretty freaking awesome. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Ben. I think last week was National Teachers Appreciation Week, so thank you, and to all the teachers in the room. You play such a vital role in creating that community for students, so thank you very much. So our next storyteller is Mark Robbins.
Hi.
In the video game Asteroids, you start out as a little triangle in the middle of the screen, and pretty soon the screen is populated by a bunch of similarly sized rocks that make their way randomly about. And as you shoot them, they multiply and they get smaller and they move faster. Occasionally there's a chubby UFO that makes its way across, shooting at you, and even more rarely, a smaller, more pesky one. And it's exactly the same in Asteroids Deluxe. However, instead of the similar shaped rocks, there are these identical octagons made up of eight triangles, much like yours. And as you shoot them, they multiply, they get smaller, and eventually they become these homing missiles that fly right at you. I was terrible at Asteroids, but I was really good at Asteroids Deluxe. Really good relative to what you might expect from a teenager circa 1984 in a strip mall in Deer Park, Washington. I was so good, my cousin Doug and I both, who played together in Deer Park, that we would fill the screen with our initials, the leaderboard. And Doug was Douglas Richards Pringle. In retrospect, a kind of cool nickname, Dr. P. I never called him that. And I, at the time, was Mark Walker Thompson, I'm sorry. But I preferred to enter ZIT because it's spelled zit, and that's hilarious. But we would get bored of putting in our own initials, and so we would start to put in the initials of our shared maternal grandparents. Now, granted, they had interesting initials. Murdy Mertilla Martin married Roy Richards Robbins. But it is more a testament to their relationship to us. The idea that two, teenage boys, probably stoned, were putting in their grandparents' initials into the video game rather than their own is a testament to your job as a grandparent, you know? Says something. And I tell that part of the story for that reason, to give you an idea of how much I probably let them down and let myself down 6 years earlier. So Roy Richards Robbins and Murdy Mertilla Martin, who were more endearingly called by their grandchildren as Bakabak and Bakabon by their grandchildren, collectively were the Bakkens. In fact, they had a license plate, a personalized plate on the camper that they drove across the country that just said Bakkens. Anyway, they owned this five-cabin resort in Loon Lake, Washington, called Robbins Cottages. And my older sister, Karen, and I would travel every summer from the east side of the Seattle area to Loon Lake to spend about a month. And in addition to having this five-cabin resort, they also had a candy store. And the way that that worked is people would come to their door and ring the doorbell, and Karen and I would sprint to the door and answer it, and then they would come in and, you know, pick out their Twizzlers or their Chico sticks or whatever, and it was awesome. You know, I can imagine as a little kid, it was really cool. But I decided once when Bakabak and Bakabon were working or shopping or something like that, that it would be a good idea to go through their bedroom drawers and closet. I found two Playboy magazines, which wasn't very remarkable at the time, a small caliber revolver that wasn't loaded, and it wasn't a big deal because they were kind of gun people, and I also found about a gallon bank bag full of change in their closet. One of those reinforced material bags with a big brass zipper and the lock, but it was unlocked. And so for the next several days and maybe weeks, I would steal change from my grandparents and probably buy candy, which doesn't make any sense because I could have just stole candy. but at some point, my sister, Karen, who's here, I think she wanted something from the thrift store in town or something. I can't remember, and I asked her, and she doesn't recall. But she wanted something. And so, like, some combination of Robin Hood and the Easter Bunny, I took the exact amount of money that she needed, and I hid it conspicuously at the top of the stairs. And when I say conspicuously, I mean I piled $8 worth of change in the middle of the top stair. And so my grandmother found it. And at that moment, it you know, she confronted me, and I'm sure that I admitted it right away. And it was decided that I must be spanked. And I'd never been spanked. And I think it had been a long time since Bakuban had spanked anyone. And it played out kind of like, you know, when you would get a hernia check for your physical as a teenager. It was like, take your pants off. And I was like, okay, this is what you do, you know? And so I took my pants off and I bent over and she spanked me. And I wish that I could tell you that the spanking worked. It's not to say that I enjoyed it, you know? It's not like my secret is that I like a good geriatric spanking every once in a while. Dang it. But what I mean is, you know, I wish that at that point I had stopped being cruel to the people who loved me and whom I loved. But it got a lot worse before it got better. But I can say now, I think with some confidence, that that part of me that was capable of stealing change from Bakuban has given way to that part of me that wanted to do something nice for my sister. Thank you very much.
That was Mark Robbins. Earlier, we heard from Linda Rippon and Ben Faulkner. Tomorrow night, we'll enjoy Christopher Horsethief and Eugene Jablonski, and then on Thursday, it will be Liz Rognes and Isaac Grambo. This was the first of a three-part series from Pivot Spokane. My thanks to them. For more information, you can simply Google pivotspokane.com.